reading this morning from Matthew 1, chapter 12, text number 11. The chapter title is Birth of Emperor Brixit. And before he is born, there's a very exciting event that takes place. He sees the personality of Godhead, who protects him from the Brahmastra of Ashwatthama. And I'll just read some of the verses preceding, because they're describing the form of the Lord. It's very nice. Starting from text 7. O son of Bhrigu, that's Shonak, is the head of the sages. He's the son of Bhrigu Muni. When the child Parikshit, the great fighter, was in the womb of his mother Uttara and was suffering from the burning heat of the Brahmastra thrown by Ashwatthama, he could observe the Supreme Lord coming to him. He was only thumb high. That was the Lord, not Maharshi Pariksit. But he was all transcendental. But here's his form. He had a very beautiful, blackish, infallible body. And he wore a dress of lightning yellow and a helmet of blazing gold. Thus he was seen by the child. The Lord was enriched with four hands, earrings of molten gold, and his eyes blood red with fury. As he was loitering about, his club constantly encircled him like a shooting star. Quite an image, huh? The Lord was thus engaged in vanquishing the radiation of the Brahmastra, just as the sun evaporates a drop of dew. He was observed by the child, who thought about who he was. So there's so many nice things discussed about this thing. Protection of the Lord could have come without his being personally visible to Maharshi Pariksit, because Krishna is omnipotent, and even he can create something invincible and then destroy it. Like the rhetorical question, if God is all powerful, can he create an object so heavy he can't lift it? Meaning, if he can create something he can't lift, then there's something he can't do, and if he can't create, there's something he can't do, so then he's not all-powerful. It's the rhetorical stump the Swami question. And the answer is, he can create something that he can't lift, and then lift it. The opposites become reconciled by the omnipotency of the personality of Godhead. So he doesn't have to appear to do anything. He can do anything through his potency, or he can personally appear and appear to do it himself, although it's happening through his potency. So it was at least a double simultaneous protect Maharshi Pariksit gesture, and then disclose his form to Maharshi Pariksit. And Prabhupada discusses that by nature's arrangement, in the first 7 months of the living entity being within the womb of the mother, their consciousness is so covered. They're in a deep state, so they can't feel things and they're not conscious, but then after, by nature's arrangement, after that period, then their consciousness awakens. So they're in this very constricted space and they're conscious. So he discusses that sometimes they pray to the Lord, get me out. I'll do anything. I'll be your devotee. Get me out. So in this case, it was not just, you know, difficult, it was a death threat. And it's also mentioned that he's a great fighter. But he's not even born yet, but his capacity to endure, a fighter has to have a capacity to endure pain when fighting. So Maharaj Pariksit had that. It was so scorching hot that it was literally unbearable. But he was bearing it because he was a great fighter. And the Lord gave his protection. And how he gave his protection, this club encircling like a shooting star, something like an electron zooming around the atom, just and that action was dissipating the heat of the Brahmastra. So the Brahmastra is invincible, but then he defeated the invincible. And then the last text 10, Maharaj Pariksit is seeing this and he's pondering, who is this? And then this morning's verse, text 11, Sutta says, while thus being observed by the child, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supersoul of everyone, and the protector of the righteous, who stretches in all directions and who is unlimited by time and space, disappeared at once. So, I'll read a wonderful purport by Srila Prabhupada. Child Pariksit was not observing a living being who was limited by time and space. He takes that phrase and says it about five times. There's a gulf of difference between the Lord and the individual living being. The Lord is mentioned herein as the supreme living being, unlimited by time and space. Every living being is limited by time and space. Although a living being is qualitatively one with the Supreme Lord, quantitatively, there's a great difference between the Supreme Lord and the common individual soul, limited and unlimited. In Bhagavad Gita, both the living beings and the Supreme Being are said to be all-pervading. How is a living being all-pervading? Yena sarvam idam tatam. Yet there is a difference between these two kinds of all-pervasiveness. A common living being or soul can be all-pervading within his own limited body, but the supreme living being is all-pervading in all space and all time. So once again, unlimited by time and space. A common living being cannot extend its influence over another common living being by its all-pervasiveness. But the Supreme Supersoul, the Personality of God, it is unlimitedly able to exert its influence over all places, at all times, and over all living beings. He's just like saying it so many times over and over again. The emphasis is the distinction between the living being and the supreme. Although there's oneness, there's difference. Quantitative difference. And in that quantitative difference, there's this all-pervasiveness, a distinction of how one is all-pervasive and the other is, in a different way, all-pervasive. Living entities are all-pervasive in a different way also. They are situated everywhere. Sarva-gata, Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita, living entities are everywhere. Prabhupada would refer to that as evidence that there's living entities on other planets. The scientists say there's no life on other planets, but Krishna says, Sarva-gata, living entities are everywhere. But then the influence of that living entity that's in different places, their pervasiveness is limited to the body that they have. Like, you know, our consciousness is to the extent of whatever our embodiment is. We're conscious of our pains and pleasures of this body, but we're not conscious of the pains and pleasures of another's body. The pervasiveness is limited. Whereas Krishna's pervasiveness is unlimited. And he's making the point here also that one living entity cannot influence another living entity. Krishna says that in Bhagavad Gita. One should not think that you're the cause of action, nor should you think that you're the cause of the fruit of action, nor should you consider that you're inducing others to act. Rather, all this is being carried out by prakriti, material nature. And who is in charge of material nature? Krishna. And so, through the agency of material nature, he's influencing all living entities. And that's another way that Krishna is all-pervasive. He's all-pervasive through the presence of his energies everywhere. That's in the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. His all-pervasiveness is in that way also. His energies, through his manifestation as super soul, through his manifestation of living entities that are everywhere, he's all-pervasive in different ways. He's all-pervasive through the agency of the impersonal Brahman. He's got lots of ways to be all-pervasive. And that all-pervasiveness can't be matched by the living entity, not even one of those four. So there's the living entity is, while qualitatively one, is quantitatively different. That's the message we're getting. Then he says, so this is now connecting that very nice discussion with Maharaj Parikshit seeing the super soul within the womb. He says, and because he is all-pervasive, Krishna, unlimited by time and space, he can appear even within the womb of the mother of child Parikshit. That's the appearances Prabhupada is attributing to his all-pervasiveness. It's like, not a big deal, because he's already there. He's all-pervasive. Literally, he's all-pervasive. So, his appearing in the womb of Uttara before Maharaj Parikshit is effortless for him because he's all pervading. He's already there. He didn't have to come from someplace and show up. Oh, Maharaj Parikshit's in a big trouble, so I've got to go over there and help him. Was already there. He just manifested himself. Then he goes into another dimension of the purport or the verse where why did he appear to Maharaj Parikshit as opposed to, you know, we don't see him. So he appeared because he's the protector of the righteous. Anyone who is surrendered soul unto the Supreme is righteous. Of course, then you could say the converse. Prabhupada would often speak about that's the standard of Sura and Asura. This one thing. Submissive to the personality of Godhead or not. And if one is not, then he's Asura. He would say rascal or mudha or somebody. And it just expands. Abhijanati mamudha manusantana vashita. Or there are four types of impure people who never surrender to Krishna. With that standard, they don't surrender to Krishna. They're mudha. In different ways. They're sinful. Unavoidably. People may accept them as great personalities, but Krishna says, and therefore we say, sinful. Then people will say, sinful? We say, sinful. Asarim bhava mashrita. Or mayaya pratyajnana. Big, big, big scholars, big, important people. Rascal. Because through whatever that so-called merit, kriti, their knowledge is stolen away by illusion, and so on. So, the standard of righteous, those who are protected, those who are surrendered to Krishna. And such a surrendered soul is specifically protected by the Lord in all circumstances. Then he goes the other direction. The Lord is the indirect protector of the unrighteous also, for he rectifies their sins through his external potency. So that rectification of sins is the punishment. Crime and punishment. Bhakti Trimarj and I were discussing this point. There's a reason for punishment. Crime and punishment. And certainly we want to see the rectification. But supposing of a criminally disposed person, not just punish them. But if a criminally disposed person is just not at all contrite and give them the next circumstance and again they're criminal. There has to be. There's a reason why punishment is there. And the intent, just like when Narada cursed Nalukuvera and Manigriva to become a tree, the intent was rectification. Not, they've offended me, I'm going to smack them. But so, indirectly, the Lord is the protector of the unrighteous also through the medium of the external energy and the difficulty one undergoes through the agency of the external energy. Like Prabhupada gives this example, sometimes a king or an important man has a son who's just impossible. And try and try and he's just impossible. So sometimes he turns his son over to a stern disciplinarian. Not like to punish his son, but to rectify. That's the intent. So like that, Krishna turns living entities over to the looks very harsh material energy. And people suffer from that discipline. But the intent is the rectification of the tendency for sin. Not only to remove the reaction, but even the tendency for sin. At least to bring them to the point of surrender to the personality of Godhead. So, but the Lord is mentioned herein as one who is dressed in the ten directions. The word in Sanskrit is dasamasaya, dasamasasya, dasamasasya, one who is dressed by the ten directions. So Prabhupada says this means dressed with garments on ten sides, up and down. So the ten directions, northeast, southwest, and northeast, southeast, like that. And then lateral. So eight and then ten. Ten directions. All directions. What does that mean? What's the implication of dressed by the ten directions? He is present everywhere. Like any direction you go, he's there. You go another direction, he's there. You go another direction, he's there. He is present everywhere and anywhere. His disappearance from the sight of the child, Parikshit, does not mean that he appeared on the spot from some other place. He was present there. And even after his disappearance, he was there, although invisible to the eyes of the child. The material covering of the effulgent firmament is also something like a womb of the mother nature. What's the effulgent firmament? What does that mean? What's firmament? Like the sky. Sometimes that word firmament means just like the effulgent firmament. So the around the planet Earth is the sky, the effulgent firmament. So the material nature is here being called this effulgent firmament. This material covering of effulgent firmament, so there's a covering of something. Within that something is the all-pervasive Lord. And its effulgence is because of the presence of the Lord. Like, you know, the effulgence of a person, when someone dies, their luster is gone. Prabhupada would sometimes speak about the media calls the Hare Krishna people as bright faced. Because that radiance of spiritual awakened condition makes that radiance and luster. And conversely, when someone, you can tell when someone is not doing well, that luster is missing. See a devotee that's like left Krishna consciousness and they don't even look the same. That luster is gone. Or conversely, someone that's just in the fire of Krishna consciousness, we're all engaged in ecstatic kirtan, the devotees are radiating. It's just the awake condition of the soul is that luster or radiance. Even within the covering of this body. So Prabhupada is writing here that this material covering of the effulgent firmament is something like a womb of the mother nature. And we are all put into the womb by the Lord, the Father of all living beings. Last sentence of the purport. He is present everywhere. Even within this material womb, of Mother Durga, and those who are deserving can see the Lord. End of purport. So that message is that Maharaj Parikshit could see the Lord because on one hand he was deserving, and because he was deserving, on the other hand, the Lord decided, let me show myself to him. Although he could have neutralized the Brahmastra without showing himself to him, he chose to show himself to him. Because this is my devotee, and I want to show myself to him. And so he did. But then he also chose to disappear. And so he did. And he chose to disappear so that, appear and then disappear, so that Maharaj Parikshit throughout his whole life would simply be hankering for the Lord, seeing the Lord again. In fact, Prabhupada describes that's why his name is Parikshit. Parikshit means the examiner. Throughout his whole life he was looking. Is he here? Is he here? Is he here? Is he here? Where is my Lord? I want to see him again throughout his whole life. Examining each situation, each place, everywhere he went, searching that expectation of again to see the Lord. A little discussion that's not in Prabhupada's purport, I thought I would discuss a little bit. This idea of all pervasiveness. The Vaishnava conception of all pervasiveness and the non-Vaishnava, the impersonal conception of all pervasiveness, is radically different. The impersonal conception of all-pervasiveness is only one of those four kinds of all-pervasiveness. It's the impersonal Brahman. Because the logic goes like this. If something is all-pervasive, if Brahman is all-pervasive, if Saha, because that's a pronoun, it or he, is all-pervasive, it is all-pervasive, how can all-pervasive have form? Because as soon as you have form, immediately you limit it. How can form be all-pervasive? Form means limited. So, no form. That's the logic. But from the Vaishnava perspective, we would say, my dear speculator, you're foolish. Because you're trying to limit the unlimited. If the absolute is unlimited, the absolute can simultaneously be all-pervasive and with form. Because in this way, in one of four ways, but in one of the four ways is as the Paramatma feature, not just Brahman feature, all-pervasive, no qualities, no form, inconceivable, immutable, all-pervasive Brahman. The Supreme can also simultaneously be all-pervasive as his Paramatma feature everywhere. Don't limit the unlimited. Shame on you. The unlimited is unlimited. And thus, he can be present in his Paramatma feature everywhere. And because he's unlimited, he can show himself vyakta and then withdraw his darshan because he's unlimited. His will is unlimited. And because you can't do that, you want to say he can't do that. That's because you're limited. And you're foolish. So don't limit the unlimited. He's unlimited by time and space. He can time by time he can simultaneously be impersonal and personal. He simultaneously can be localized and all-pervasive. Because he's unlimited. If you want to say can't, then you're limiting the unlimited. Shame on you. Because your mind can't comprehend, it doesn't limit the unlimited. And he can have his personal feature. He can create that which is limited, and being the unlimited, he can enter into that limited materially. That's not possible. It's like, you know, having a glass jar that's of a certain volume and putting something that's of a bigger volume inside. Can't do it. You stuff it in, but unlimited in within the limited. It's a contradiction. But the Supreme, because he's supreme, he's the resolve of all contradictions. So the power of speculation can't comprehend. Just by nature, it can't comprehend the unlimited. But as we're hearing here, if the Lord so desires by disclosure, he can be understood. At least to some extent he can be understood, to the extent that he discloses himself, and to the extent the living entity is receptive, here in this case, righteous, then to that, to whatever limited capacity a living entity, tiny living entity, a limited living entity has, they can have some glimpse of the unlimited. In these three different features. So the feature that's being shown to Maharaj Parikshit is the Paramatma feature. With his club whirling so fast it's like a shooting star. And by that measure, not that he needs that measure, he can do without doing anything. But to show the child, he's neutralizing the heat of the Brahmastra so that the child can survive. And see his form and wonder who he is, and then he disappears. I'll read the verse again. While thus being observed by the child, the Supreme Lord Personality of Godhead, the Supersoul of everyone, and the protector of the righteous, who stretches in all directions, and who is unlimited by time and space, disappeared at once. If he stretches in all directions and unlimited by time and space, then you should be able to see him all the time. Not just appear and disappear, but that he's the supreme, he's the supreme will, and by his supreme will he can make himself visible or not visible. And for him it's effortless. It's not like, okay, now I've got to do some work. I'm going to make myself appear. Come from some distant place and then appear. And then I can do some more work and make myself disappear. It's effortless. By his supreme will. And he chooses to do so by his free will in reciprocation with the qualified soul. So from our side, we just have to become qualified, small thing. And a core part of how to make unqualified Kali Yuga persons qualified is by hearing the topics of Srimad Bhagavatam. That's the message of Shukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Parikshit, both for Maharaj Parikshit himself, who is already qualified, and for everybody else in the age of Kali. Help us become qualified. Any discussion? Nice verse.
The Lord chooses to appear or disappear by His will. Similarly, does He also choose what form He needs to show the devotee, like 200 Krishna women, Krishna form or the Vishnu form?
Yeah.
Or it depends on the devotee's spirit.
He reciprocates with the mood of the devotee. And like Prabhupada describes, He appeared as Lord Srinadev in order to uphold the word of Lord Brahma. Neither this nor that, so it's to uphold the word of his devotee. There's a leela that took place in Shiva Sangam where the devotees were having their evening kirtan. And Advaitacharya was in a particular mood of just complete ecstasy, and for 6 hours he was dancing and dancing and dancing. Actually, it was in the afternoon, not in the evening kirtan. So it was just in the house of Srivastava, which is kirtan and dancing and dancing. And Lord Chaitanya came. He saw Advaitacharya dancing and dancing. He was just in such an ecstatic mood. He said, "Advaita, ask me for any benediction. Whatever you like." And Advaita said, "Just being in the house of Srivas Thakur, having kirtan, and having you present, that's all I need. I don't want anything else." So Mahaprabhu insisted 2 more times. And finally Advaita said, I would like to see that form that you showed to Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. I want to see that form, your universal form." So instantly Chaitanya Mahaprabhu manifested, this is in Chaitanya Bhagavan, manifested the universal form. And Advaita was in ecstasy. He kept dancing and dancing. The kirtan was roaring. And Mahaprabhu in the universal form was dancing and dancing with Advaita Acharya. Lord Nityananda, understanding the mood of the Lord, came at once to the house of Srivas Thakur, and he saw that form, and he was also dancing and dancing and dancing. According to the mood of the devotee, the desire of the devotee. And sometimes his own, with Murari Gupta, he showed several forms. Raha, Ram. One time, forearm Vishnu. Just in a mood of ecstatic devotion, exhibited a forearm Vishnu form at the house of Srivas Thakur. He was calling out loudly, "Garuda! Garuda!" So, understanding his mood, Murari Gupta came running to Lord Chaitanya and said, "I am he. I am Garuda. Tell me which destination in the universe you would like to go, and I will take you there at once." He got down so Lord Chaitanya could get on his shoulders, and he lifted him up and started running around the courtyard. So sometimes just ecstatic exhibition in Mahaprabhu's case, and otherwise, according to the mood of love of the devotee, just appropriate.
It'll change.
Yeah. Forearm form in the prison house of Kamsa. He said, "Why? I want you to know I'm not just your son. I am that Lord. where you underwent so long austerities for and desired to have a son like me, but there's no one like me, so I'm he. But there, because of parental affection, they prayed to assume a child like, to assume a child like. It's not like a menu, you just, you know, go down the menu and click with your browser and it shows that form. It's a transcendental reciprocation with the Buddha, the devotee. And as appropriate, he shows that form.
You said that the intent of punishment is rectification, the sinful tendency in the heart. And I was thinking about how does that point apply more practically to my situation. I was thinking with regards to disciplining a child. It's not such a serious crime or anything, but how to make that call that when a disciplinary action is required for certain things that they do, and when.
Two things, and both are important. One is the place from which discipline should come should be a place of love, and then, and that's a major challenge in itself. And the other is that the inspiration from Supersoul. In other words, when love rules, then Krishna gives direction. One can be tuned into or be a recipient of Krishna's direction, because it's not in all circumstances like this, discipline's required in all circumstances like that, it's not required. It's not a cookie cutter thing. It's at different times, different things are appropriate. You know, it's like anything that you do with some finesse. Let's say you're driving a car. Know at what point you put on brake, what point you put on the gas pedal. It's not like rigid rules in, when you're in a, let's say, a tight situation. There are some things you shouldn't do. When you're on ice, you don't slam the brake. There are things that you can, if you're not tuned into what you should and shouldn't do, then you can have a big problem. Same with discipline. First is just to check, is the place from which I'm about to choose an action, select an action to do, is it coming from a place of love? That's the first. And is that understanding there from the recipient? That's in the matter of disciplining a child. And then, expand it to a broader perspective. And some where you have some authority, some responsibility, and other people are you're responsible for. Have you done everything within your power to let them understand that where you're coming from is a place of love? And then, the action should be. And there's no guarantee even that it'll be accepted as coming from a place of love, because it may be taken as. You're depriving me. And how can that be loving if you're depriving me? And still in some circumstances that needs to be done. Whether it's understood or not understood. That's hard. It's a hard call to make. And life is a series of those choices. free will choices, and just we have to depend upon Krishna's inspiring us and good association to help us make sure that we stay on track with. Acting with compassion at the same time when discipline is required. Discipline. A lot of my service is involved with that very dimension.
Guru Maharaj, does rectification through punishment apply to devotional service also?
No. In the case of devotional service, the teaching that Prabhupada has given us is, if there's something, well, maybe I'm not understanding your question. If Krishna puts us in a situation of difficulty or some hardship or pain or some suffering or something, it's not the same as the agency of the external energy. Rather, what it is Krishna giving us a token reminder of what's back that direction. And so we can be sober and be grateful that Krishna is giving that reminder so that we don't fall asleep at the wheel and just take things for granted and become complacent and like that. Don't forget that the message is, don't forget that you're a product of mercy. That the fortune. Just listening to Prabhupada this morning, listening to Prabhupada speak on this point, that those who are born, he was speaking in Los Angeles, so here in America you have these nice things. He was explaining the Purnamushika Bhava story. So you Americans, you are lions. You're given this facility, but don't forget where the facility came, because if you forget where the facility came, you become neglectful of God. Purnamushikaba. And it's easy to have happen, because he who gave this facility can easily take the facility away. We as devotees interact with other devotees. We should always be mindful of who's the master. It's not like, you know, our responsibility is on our own behalf to give or deprive. Our responsibility is to be agents or instruments of Krishna. Then it's a lot of soul searching. What does Krishna want? When we're interacting, you know, when we're giving facility or restricting facility. Because Krishna gives us facility, and then we can delegate that facility, but we have to do it in a responsible way, and sometimes not give and sometimes give. So it comes down to being Krishna conscious, recognizing whatever is the resource that we have in our hand, it's the resource that Krishna has given. Now, what's the way in which Krishna would want this resource used? And if we have a different conception, even as devotees, that resource can very quickly evaporate. And Krishna can easily give more resource than you can handle. That's the nature of Hari. He can take away with 1,000 hands and give with 1,000 hands. Our position is to be in the mood of recognizing where everything is coming from and serving He from whom everything is coming, even as our in our role amongst the assembly and devotees. Challenging sometimes, but it's the human form of life to accept that challenge in a responsible way. Anything else? Yes.
I was just thinking about when you're talking about how you make the unlimited limitless, and how you can do that, like.
For not just last life. It's like so many lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. It's the tendency to be rebellious. And to be rebellious, he who was actually our master, he has to disappear. And put him in a box. Or shut him out. Or wave a wand and have him disappear. So we can be rebellious. So impersonal tendency is very strong. That this materialism is just a byproduct or say a particular strand of that impersonalism. Because how can we get away with being materialists? It's, there's nobody who's the proprietor, so I want to make myself the proprietor. It's impersonalism. Like walking into somebody's home that you don't even know, and they're there in the house, and you're like, they're not even there in the house, and you see something you like, and you grab that something and walk out of the house. We're born in this world and nothing is ours, and we're very busy as materialists trying to make things ours. It's impersonalism. Just God doesn't exist. It's up for grabs. And then, somebody hollers, "Hey, stop! Thief! I'll call the police." We just keep moving like we don't even hear them say that. And so we get slammed. That's materialism. The impersonalism is just the philosophy behind it. That I'm not accountable. There's no supreme. I can do what I like. Then it gets into all kinds of existentialism, really sad philosophies. Probably get a chance to study that nice stuff sometime in college. Like a philosophy course for how crazy Western philosophers are. So even in our lives, that tendency is there. It's just the rebellious spirit. You have to do away with God, so you philosophically do away with God. You can't do away with God just by some philosophy, some mumbo jumbo, and God disappears. But that tendency is our rebellious spirit. Prabhupada writes in Bhagavad Gita that this impersonalism and voidism arises out of frustration. So the frustration is, I want to enjoy. And on my terms, I want to enjoy. And I don't enjoy, I become frustrated. And so God doesn't exist. But even before I had the philosophy of God doesn't exist, I'm acting like God doesn't exist. So, as devotees, we need to guard against that tendency. One of the best antidotes is Srimad Bhagavatam, hearing again and again how Krishna is at the root of everything. And then not just philosophically becoming convinced, but acting in that spirit, becoming convinced within the heart, and then carrying out our actions in devotion. And then when we do like that, there's realization at every moment. Like this sense of the question that Hemangi was asking yesterday about desiring mercy, just like being tuned into reality. We're dependent upon Krishna's mercy. Acting from that place of consciousness will give so many, you know, supportive realizations. Just give up our rebellious spirit. Surrender to Krishna. We get so many realizations. It's true. We're dependent upon Krishna. Krishna is very loving. He'll take care of us. He's very merciful. And we're in this ocean of mercy instead of the ocean of struggle. Formula is simple. What Prabhupada was saying in this lecture I was hearing this morning, the formula is very simple, but people are rascals. They won't take it. He said when I arrived in Los Angeles, the reporter was asking Swamiji how to overcome this crisis, that crisis. I said the answer is simple: Krishna consciousness. But you're such a rascal, you won't take it. And it's true. The answer is there. Then he gave examples of, you know, there's the petroleum crisis. This was way back then. So if the people in the Middle East understood this is the property of Krishna, then it should be used in Krishna's service and not we're the proprietors and we sell it at a big price. And that makes it look like there's a shortage because we jacked the price up. And then similarly, in the United States, this is Krishna's property. So the people that live in the desert, they should be able to come and live in this country. But they will not do that, because they're too busy with so many other solutions, and it's no solution. They're rascals. They won't accept a solution. So they have this endless struggle with crises. And the solution is there. But they won't surrender to Krishna, so they're rascals. And they have to struggle. So in our lives also, the solution is there. That impersonal tendency is a rebellious spirit. And we're frustrated. We didn't enjoy the way that we thought we were going to enjoy it. God is dead, or God is, or whatever it is. He's not cooperating. Why is God doing this to me? And so on. It's not fair. we want to be the enjoyers, independent, rebellious spirit. Anything else? Yeah?
Maharaj, can you suggest how we can take this message of proprietorship and understanding that who's to whom the resources actually belong, so that one can, you know, constantly be mindful and reminding ourselves?
Well, as soon as you bring in the word constantly, immediately my thoughts go to love. You don't have constantly anything unless there's love. The teaching of proprietorship is the message of Ishopanishad. So study Ishopanishad. Then you get the message. But then the question, when you say constantly, the only thing that's constant, the only thing that maintains constant consciousness is loving attachment. Not just, you know, philosophy and I say yes to the philosophy. My spirit is still rebellious. So it's sometimes on and sometimes off and sometimes completely off and sometimes on. It's unsteady. Not constant. Constant is where there's love. And it's constant. And then it doesn't matter. This situation, this time, that circumstance, it doesn't matter. Because love rules. In all circumstances. Then it's from the heart. Krishna is my master. He owns everything. Everything should be used. And there isn't any other consideration because love rules. Prior to love is attachment. Prior to attachment is some. We go backwards into the stages of bhakti. It's some taste. And some taste prior to that is purification. Prior to purification is accepting the position of being a servant. Constitutional. Not sometimes. All the time. Constitutionally, we're servants. So if I'm a servant, I become the good servant. Pleasing to the master. But there's things inside that are standing in the way of, let me overcome those things by mercy. Then comes, then you go up. Steadiness, taste, attachment, love. It's unstoppable. Inexorable is the phrase Prabhupada uses. Ahoituki pratyata. There's no material thing that makes it happen. There's no material thing that can stop it because it's not material. Love is, real love is not material. Not attraction, repulsion. It's constitutional. So we have our process to come to that stage of love and attachment and taste and freed from anarthas. It's position of being the servant. Non-stop, unconditional service. Except for our conditions. And then we have to address those conditions. We you know, space out when something that we want doesn't happen, so we lose focus on being a servant. We become an enjoyer. We're not an enjoyer. That's a disease. The servants. And in the position of servant, that's our enjoyment. It's love. And then varieties of rasa unfold where Mother Yashoda can shake a stick at Krishna. And it's love. And Krishna loves Mother Yashoda shaking the stick. Although he's crying. looks like something else. It looks, the material thing looks like, oh, why is she being, making her child cry? It's exchange of love. So it starts with us with service regulated by the vidhis of sadhana bhakti. Start there in the how-to list and submit ourselves to the vidhis of sadhana bhakti under the guidance of the scriptures and the spiritual master. Trust that that will carry us to that position where proprietorship is in the hand of Krishna, always. Because of love. Not sometimes, always. Much Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Do you know how to make mechanical pencils work? There's lead inside, but it's not coming out.
We never had such fancy things when we were growing up.
Maybe your kids were
not. We just had a very simple pencil that we would sharpen.
Now it's working. For the punch it.